I'll be reading Proverbs chapter 1, verses 2 through 7. For attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the young, let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. For understanding proverbs and parables, the saying and riddles of the wise, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline.
Good morning. I especially appreciate Glenn's prayer. I don't quite feel like I'm hitting on all eight cylinders just yet, and I really appreciate your letting me try, because I think the only way I ever am going to do that is by serving the Lord. Well, this morning we're going to talk about that wise man. We're going to talk about wisdom. I don't know exactly what caused me to think about this, but I was sitting in my chair and we were in church, and something hit me about wisdom that just floored me when it hit me, and I want to share it with you today. Who's the wisest man that ever lived? Form it in your mind. Somebody say, who's the wisest man that ever lived? Jesus? Any other wise men you'd name? Solomon. Okay, so how many people would say Solomon is the wisest man that ever lived? Okay, how many would say Jesus is the wisest man that ever lived? Okay, similar number. That's an interesting thing when you look at the scriptures and what the scriptures say, and we'll cover that in a second. Who was wiser, Jesus or Solomon? But certainly, you'd concede that Solomon's right up there, right? If you believe Jesus was the wisest man that ever lived, who was the second wisest man? Solomon. Okay, so Solomon scores pretty good no matter what you do. Well, what about this? Who's the wisest person that you have ever personally known? Stop and ponder that for a second. Who's the wisest person? Babe's laughing. Uh-oh. Have you got that in your mind? You know, I can't quite fix it, because for me it's a composite. You know, I can't really say one single person is the wisest person I've ever known, because there are little bits and pieces from here and from there that you kind of put them all together, and yeah, this whole realm of people that helped to shape my life were wise collectively. I think about my grandparents. You know, my grandparents showed me how important it was to be devoted to each other. That's wisdom that I got from my grandparents. My dad, he taught me, don't harp about things. You know what a harpy is? Somebody just keeps going on and on about whatever it is that they don't like. And he taught me to go do what needs to be done without having to be asked to do it. I mean, he was really, really strong about this, and he spent a lot of time working on me to do that. My mom taught me that you should make every stroke count and keep going all day and never, ever quit. That's what my mom taught me. My parents together taught me to be a worker, to be self-sufficient, and most importantly, they taught me to be devoted to God. It's pretty important. My wife taught me that kindness is more effective than forcefulness, and to be happy. And my kids, well, they taught me that I'm not as smart as I thought I was. So you learn something from everybody. And I'm sure some of you can think about people in your life that you've learned something from, that have been wise. So just what is this wisdom? And I went and looked it up in the dictionary, and I found two definitions for wisdom. Let me share them. The first one says, it's the quality of being wise, having knowledge and the capacity to make due use of it. Knowledge of the best ends and the best means. The second definition is the results of wise judgments. These words, wisdom and wise, are found hundreds of times through the scriptures. And if you want to know what the original Greek and and Hebrew words were. I've got them written down. I'll share them with you later. Come see me. There's a lot of related words. If you're going to go back and take your concordance and look for wisdom, you might look for discernment, understanding, knowledge, craftsmanship, shrewdness, prudent, discreet, counsel, listen, and learn. If you look for the antonyms of wisdom, well, the antonym is foolishness and folly. And the words that you find there that are like it are fool and simple and naive and speak and madness. You also find in the Bible a couple of times the word philosophy. Philosophy, you remember Rudy was telling us about phileo? He said that Jesus asked John, he said, John, do you phileo me? Do you even like me? Do you love me like a brother? Well, philosophy comes from two Greek words. The first is phileo, which means love. And the other word is sophia. Sophia, anybody know what it means? It means wisdom. To the Greeks, the goddess Sophia was the female goddess of wisdom. So when he talked about phileo, sophia, this is philosophy. The words appear twice in the New Testament. Once, it's in Acts chapter 17, where Paul is in Athens, where philosophy began. And it says that some of the Greek philosophers came and challenged Paul, and they asked him, what is this that you're teaching? And it resulted in Paul being able to deliver that famous sermon that he did in the Areopagus on Mars Hill. He used it to the full extent. The other case is in Colossians 2:8, and we'll come back to that in a little bit. There's another word that's not in your Bible, and I think everybody here knows it. That word is sophomore. You know what a sophomore is? So generally speaking, it's somebody that's in the second year of study in high school or in college. But it's got an interesting root, because the first part of that, sophomore, it starts out Sophia, and then the other part is moros, which is also a Greek word. Moros does not mean wise. It means, it's the word that we get the English word moron from. Ooh. So, Sophia moros. Wise, foolish. And what it's talking about is it's something that happens, and if you're in the 10th grade or second year of college right now, I'm sorry. How many of us have lived through being a sophomore? Okay? How many of you are willing to admit that you were trying to look wise like you knew something and it just made you look stupid? Okay? All right? Most of us have been there. So if you're in that position right now, sorry about it. You'll get over it. Hopefully. Okay? That's going to come back up too, because although the word isn't used, the idea occurs. So let's talk about the wisdom of Solomon. And I don't think I can do any better than to just read what it says in 1 Kings about Solomon. His father David had died, and he had become king. And he prayed to God, and he said this, "Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David. Yet I am but a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. Your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people, or too many to be numbered or counted. So give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, to discern between good and evil, for who is able to judge this great people of yours?" It was pleasing in the sight of the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said to him, "Because you have asked this thing, and have not asked for yourself long life, nor asked for riches for yourself, nor have asked for the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself discernment to understand justice, behold, I have done according to your words. Behold, I have given you a wise and discerning heart, so that there has been no one like you before you, nor shall one like you arise after you. I have given you also what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there will not be any among the kings like you in all your days. And if you walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and commandments as your father David walked, I will prolong your days." It says in chapter 4, beginning in verse 29, or actually chapter 4, verses 29 and verse 34, Now, God gave Solomon wisdom and very great discernment and breadth of mind, like the sand that's on the seashore. Verse 34 says, men came from all peoples to hear the wisdom of Solomon, from all of the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. Now, wisdom is something to be desired. It really is. It's a good thing. It's something that's been desired from the very beginning. Think about this. We usually think about this in a little different light. Genesis chapter 3, verse 6, talks about the fall of mankind. And it says this, when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate, and she gave also to her husband with her, and he ate. Part of her motivation was that she wanted to become wise. Proverbs 14:1 talks about a woman who builds up her house. It says, a wise woman builds her house, but the foolish one tears it down with her own hands. Ecclesiastes verse 7 says, for wisdom is protection just as money is protection. But the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of its possessors. Wisdom is a good thing. And this is one of those things that I asked Joe about. Actually, I kind of teased Joe about this. Is how many of you are familiar with Joe's taters? Joe Schreiber brings taters to the potlucks. Anybody like them? They're great comfort food, right? I mean, they're right up there with a Hardee's biscuit or maybe chicken and dumplings or turkey and dressing or whatever it is that's your comfort food. Is pretty good, right? It's a great thing. Wisdom is like that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with wisdom. Wisdom is a great thing. Everybody should have some. And wisdom is something that comes from God. I think you all know it. Daniel said it. Remember when Daniel was called on that King Nebuchadnezzar was going to kill all of the wise men because nobody could tell him what his dream was? And he brought Daniel in, and they told him, they said, Daniel's going to do this. But before Daniel told the king what he said, what his dream was, he said this. He said, this is in Daniel chapter 2, beginning of verse 20. Let the name of God be blessed forever and ever, for wisdom and power belong to him. It's he who changes the times and the epochs. He removes kings and establishes kings. He gives wisdom to wise men and knowledge to men of understanding. Certainly all wisdom, no matter where it's at, no matter everything, just like everything else that you have in this life, you got from God. You don't have anything that you didn't get from God. Wisdom is one of them. And God's people are encouraged to act wisely. Listen to these three passages from Colossians. The first is in chapter 1, 9, where he says, this is Paul talking about the Colossian people and how he felt about them. He said, for this reason also, since the day I heard, we have not ceased to pray for you and ask that you be filled with the knowledge of his will and all spiritual wisdom and understanding. Skipping down to chapter 3, verse 16, he tells them, let the word of Christ richly dwell within you, with all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with thankfulness in your hearts to God. Now, skipping down to chapter 4, he says, and this, be sure and listen to this piece. He says, conduct yourselves with wisdom toward outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person. He wanted them to have wisdom. They should have wisdom, and God expects us to behave wisely before the world. James 1, chapter 5 says this, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives to all generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. Wisdom is like Joe's taters. It's something good to have. It really is. And wisdom, just what is it? You know, when you have a vision of some wise sage, some wise person, when you were thinking of a wise person, you know, one of the people that I remember being really wise when I was growing up, well, actually two people. One was my Uncle Richard. He was always wise. Do you know how many times he took me aside and gave me advice unsolicited? Zero. Another guy was Brian Lawrence. He was like this shaman. I mean, he could pick up poisonous snakes and snap them and pop their heads off and do all kinds of strange things. Do you know how many times he gave me advice unsolicited? zero. It's not about speaking out loud words, because wisdom isn't about speaking. Wisdom is about listening. Listen to this. Proverbs 3, beginning of verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make your paths straight. Skip down to Proverbs chapter 12. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. Skip down to Proverbs 17. It says, He who restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he's considered prudent. It's given to verse chapter 19. It says this, Listen to counsel, accept discipline, that you may be wise the rest of your days. And in the New Testament, James says this, because he has a lot to say about this subject. This is in chapter 1, verse 19. He says, My beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Wisdom isn't about what you say. Wisdom is about listening. You have to listen. You know, I took this training. My business that I work for sent me off to this training, and there were all kinds of things that they taught us. And one of the things that it was about coaching. Anybody ever been coached in anything? Have you ever had a coach? And one of the things that the guy said was, who do you know that's a world-class athlete or a world-class anything else that doesn't have a coach? Somebody to tell him what he's doing wrong and help guide him back on the path. That's what he's talking about here, that wisdom is about listening. And if you don't listen, who doesn't listen? Somebody that thinks he's already wise? So listen to what the Proverbs say about that. Do you see a man who's wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than him. It's better to be a fool and realize that you are than it is to actually be wise and be self-prideful about it. Isaiah, we've been studying Isaiah in Bible class this quarter. Here's what Isaiah said. This is in chapter 5, verse 21. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and clever in their own sight. Jeremiah also wrote about this. This is Jeremiah chapter 9, beginning of verse 23. Thus says the Lord, Let not a wise man boast about his wisdom. Let not the mighty man boast of his might, nor the rich man boast of his riches. But let him who boasts boast of this, that he understands and knows me, that I am the Lord who exercises loving kindness, justice, and righteousness on the earth, for I delight in these things, declare the Lord. The idea, I won't read it, but it's repeated in Philippians chapter 3. Paul wrote to the Romans, he said this, Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. Declaring yourself self-important is a problem. You know, since the beginning of time, there has only been one man who ever lived who was more important than any other man. Just one. And he lived as if he weren't. What does that tell us? Wisdom is all about humility, not being self-important. I asked Dave if he would lead a couple of songs today that were written by a guy named William Cooper, someone who struggled with the same things that Solomon struggled with. And he wrote this poem. And this poem made me think back to Rudy's sermon recently where he talked about rote learning. Do you remember that? I hope it struck a chord with you. Listen to what William Cooper said. Knowledge and wisdom, far from being one, have oft-times no connection. Knowledge dwells in heads replete with the thoughts of other men. Wisdom in minds attentive to their own. Knowledge a rude, unprofitable mass, the mere materials on which wisdom builds, till smoothed and squared and fitted into place, does but encumber those to whom it seems to enrich. Knowledge is proud that he has learned so much. Wisdom is humble that he knows so little. That's what wisdom's about. It's about humility. James talked about wisdom. And he said, he asked, this is chapter 3, he said, who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior and his deeds the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but it's earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there's disorder in every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, and then peaceable, and gentle and reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. The seed of whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Mankind has often sought to have wisdom, and I think we live in a whole world of people who claim themselves to be wise. The first chapter of Romans talks about these people, people who are seeking their own wisdom. I'll come back to the first part of that chapter, but listen to what he says about the results. He says, just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind to do those things which are not proper, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy and murder and strife, malice, gossip, slander, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful. Worldly wisdom does not result in us finding God. It'll drag us away from Him. Now, many of you name Solomon as the wisest man that ever lived, or at least the second wisest man. Did you know Solomon had a lot of trouble with that wisdom? He became disillusioned. It didn't do him any good in the end. Listen to what he said in his own words. This is from Ecclesiastes, first in chapter 1, beginning of verse 16. He said, I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. And I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. And I realized that this also is striving after wind. Because in much wisdom, there's much grief. Increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. In chapter 2, beginning in verse 12, he says this, so I turn to consider wisdom, madness and folly. For what will a man do who has come after the king except what has already been done? And I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but fools walk in darkness. And yet I know that one fate falls to both of them. And then I said to myself, as is the fate of a fool, it will befall me. Why have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this is vanity. For there's no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as in the coming days all will be forgotten, and how the wise man and the fools alike die. So I hated life, for the work which had been done under the sun, which is grievous to me, because everything is futility and striving after the wind. He wasn't just disillusioned. He lost his place with God. If you read about the account of the end of Solomon's life, it's in 1 Kings chapter 11, begins in verse 1. Listen to what it says. Now King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, Hittite women, from the nations concerning which the Lord said to the sons of Israel, you shall not associate with them, nor shall they associate with you, for they will surely turn your heart away after their gods. Solomon held fast to these in love. He had 700 wives, princesses, 300 concubines. His wives turned his heart away. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away after other gods, and his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. For Solomon went after the Asherah, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the detestable idol of the Amorites. Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and did not follow the Lord fully as David had done. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable idol of Moab, on the mountain which is east of Jerusalem, and for Molech, the detestable idol of the sons of Ammon. Thus he did for all of his foreign wives, who burned incense and sacrificed to their God. This is the point that hit me. Solomon was the wisest man who ever lived. His fall proves that wisdom doesn't save us. Wisdom won't save you. Here's the guy that had it all. It didn't help him a bit. You know, at the end of his life, Ahab turned to God. You remember Ahab, the guy that's like a villain all throughout the most of the time that he's in the Bible? At the end of his life, he turned to God. Solomon turned away. Wisdom didn't help him. Sometimes in the church, we're tempted to rely on worldly wisdom. And somebody might ask, well, what if I'm studying with somebody that respects worldly wisdom and I need to show him worldly wisdom in order to reach that person? Well, here's the sad fact. If somebody depends on worldly wisdom, and maybe they'll say, you know, they're connected with some religious group or some particular spiritual leader or whatever that they think is wise, and they want you to debate with that person, and they're going to make a judgment about which one of you is wiser, and follow that one. Even if you succeed, and you convince them that you're wiser than the other person, you haven't really converted them to God. You converted them to you. And worldly wisdom is more important to that person than the message of God. Have you ever studied with somebody and saw them pierced through the heart? You know, when you're studying with somebody and you're delivering the simple message of Christ, and it comes to the point like that time in Acts that you just see them, it's like somebody took a spear and stuck right through them, and you can see it in their complete demeanor. That's the person that's ready to receive Christ. It's a simple message. We sang, "Tell me the story of Jesus." Is the story of Jesus something that's complex and something that you have to get a degree in theology to understand? No, it's not. Wisdom isn't the thing that works. And if you do succeed in converting somebody to you and your wisdom, what happens if you're not there and somebody else that sounds wise shows up to that person? Are they going to be saved? Are they going to stay with it? Risk is really strong, they're not. And some of us may have been convinced to become Christians just through that path. I can believe with a group this large that's happened. I pray to God that you go beyond that and experience that piercing that you have to accept the simple message of Christ. Colossians 2:8, I said we come back to it. It talks about philosophy, the love of wisdom. He says to the Colossians, "See to it that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deception, according to the tradition of men, according to the elementary principles of the world, rather than according to Christ." There's a silver lining in this too. Have you ever felt like that you'd like to study the Bible with people, but you just don't know enough to be convincing to them? Anybody ever had that thought? I remember Glenn Davis and I setting out to knock on doors on, what was the name of that street? I forget too. It was over by what used to be Sloan Wallace Stadium, right? Okay. And we were knocking on doors and we were just scared to death that somebody was going to say, "Come on in and study the Bible." So, right? And somebody did. Della Stout, right? Yeah. And not only did we not have to know anything, Della had already been baptized like the week before down in Arizona, and she was looking for the church. Golden, Colorado. Okay? See, it's not about you, it's about the message. It isn't that you've got to show some great wisdom and learning and show them your degrees and everything else. It's a simple message. God's going to do the work. You just have to be spreading the word. Well, now this is the part that I know all the husbands were looking forward to. This is the foolishness part. Now, this is biblical to talk about this, by the way. Let me read you a passage. This is in Proverbs chapter 30, begins in verse 18. Solomon said this. He said, "There are three things which are too wonderful for me, four which I do not understand. The way of an eagle in the sky, the way of a serpent on a rock, the way of a ship in the middle of the sea, and the way of a man with a maid." Right? Okay? So I asked wives last week, you know, tell me a story about your husband, you know, something that he might have done to try to impress you while you were courting. And I got a few responses. There were a lot of husbands that seemed really anxious to get home last week after services. So some of you, I pointed at you when you left, you know, because I knew you were dodging. So I had one husband that said, oh, my wife's not going to have anything to tell you that I did like that. And she said, oh, yeah, you need to see the pictures of him doing the He-Man poses when we were young. Yeah. And some of the husbands were probably afraid that I was going to name names and people would be pointing and giggling at you in church. And I figured that I wouldn't do that. What I'm going to do is I'll tell you the stories and let you guess who it was that did it. Okay? That way everybody gets to be guilty, even the people whose wives didn't tell stories on you. I hope to get all of these juicy stories, and I didn't get them. What are you going to do? One wife told me about, she was babysitting, and her future husband came over to spend some time with her, and the baby needed a bath before they put him to bed, and she had to go do something else, and she came back, and guess where she found him? Splashing and playing in the bathtub with the baby. So I asked her if he sang the Rubber Ducky song. You know the one, the Rubber Ducky, you're the one, like that. So anyway, you'll have to try that song out on people and see who it is that turns red when they hear it. Okay? A couple of wives, actually several wives, told me the same thing that I would, I'm thinking about it, I think it's probably the same thing that Sharon would have said. You know, I asked her about, you know, well, just what was it that made you, marry me? And she said, well, we just fit. We just fit. She said, the first time you put your arm around me, I just fit, you know. And if you have that, that's great. You see, she didn't need for me to do foolish things to impress her because she knew I was a fool for her all along. See? I did the foolish things as a bonus. Okay? And if you're lucky enough to be in that situation, well, that's great. You should thank God for that. Another wife told me about her husband playing the guitar and singing and doing things with electricity that scared him bad because he didn't know what he was doing. Okay? That's another case. Several told me about their husbands doing things that were handy. And you know, one of my heroes is Red Green. You all know Red Green? He's the guy that says, if she doesn't find you handsome, at least she should find you handy. Okay? So, an example, a couple of examples. One fellow, he showed up for a date with his teenage girlfriend, and before he was gone, he wound up fixing grandma's washing machine. Handy. There's another fellow that must have really wanted to impress his wife because he took her out on a date and he said, here we are, and they showed up in his garage and he let her pull the engine, help him pull the engine out of his dad's car. And she said she even got to wear dad's greasy coveralls that had been thoroughly broken in and doing it. And she also told about she was supposed to hold the tail shaft up on the transmission and she was talking and she needed both hands to talk, so she let go of the transmission. You can guess how that turned out. But I'm sure that he convinced her. Both of these guys, I know them today, and their wives should have known that they were going to try to be handy and fix things for the whole rest of their life, and they're both just like that, so the wives needed to know that. There's one story. Oh, a couple other stories. I got a couple late. One is about the fella, and I'm not going to name who he is, and I'm not going to tell you what kind of car it was, but he showed up for the date in just the coolest car that she'd ever seen. So you'll have to guess who did that. It wasn't me. I had a 1982 Chevrolet station wagon complete with wood grain paneling on the side. Okay? But a cool car. And she named what the car was. Like I said, I'm not going to tell you. Yeah, it was a cool car. I'll bet that guy wishes he had it back. But one story really makes the point, is what I'm trying to get to. So this was an email. An email said this. He showed up at my house with some recorded Christian music. And then he started trying to act out the story of the song with his hands. And she looked at him and she couldn't help but laugh. She thought it looked pretty silly. And then it hit her what was happening. And just let me read. I added one word to this for clarity. Just let me read verbatim what the note said. What started out to be a man making a fool of himself ended up to be a very spiritual experience for me. I soon realized he was being a fool for Jesus and for me. Now, fellas, you young guys who aren't married yet and want to be a courter someday, you might want to take a note of this. Every woman being courted wants to know that she's more important to you than you are to yourself. That's why it's pretty important that you're willing to make a fool of yourself for her. That's pretty important, isn't it? She wants to know that she's more important to you than how you look. She does. And if being a little foolish wins the heart of your beloved, think back to the second definition of wisdom. Sometimes it's wise to be foolish. It really is. So why would I tell you a story like this? It's because we're going to get to the best part. When Paul was talking to the Corinthians and the Romans and the Colossians, all of those people were believers, people that came to them and said, listen to us, we are wise, we're going to show you how this religion thing ought to happen. They were pushing their own religion. They were trying to get people to follow them instead of Christ. And Paul hit them head on. And he called the wisdom of God, the purpose of God, foolishness. And then he pointed out to them that the foolishness of God was stronger, more important than the wisdom of mankind. A little foolishness. So listen to some of the things that he said. This is in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Beginning in verse 18, it says, for the word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it's the power of God. For it's written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the cleverness of the clever I'll set aside. Where is the wise man? Where's the scribe? Where's the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not come to know God, God was well pleased through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. For indeed, Jews ask for signs and Gentiles search for wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified. To the Jews a stumbling block and to the Gentiles foolishness. But to those who are called, both Greeks and Jews, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. Consider your calling, brethren. Not many of you were wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble, but God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things which are strong, the base things to shame the base things of the world and the despised God has chosen, the things that are not, so that he may nullify the things that are, so that no man may boast before God. But in his doing, you are in Christ Jesus, who came to us wisdom from God, who became to us wisdom from God, and righteousness, and sanctification, and redemption, so that it's written, let him who boasts, boast in the Lord. He reminded them of his preaching. He said, when I came to you, I did not come with superiority of wisdom, of speech or wisdom, proclaiming to you the testimony of God. For I determined to know nothing among you except Christ Jesus and him crucified. I was with you in weakness and fear and much trembling, and my message and my preaching were not with persuasive words of wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and power, so that your faith would not rest on the wisdom of men, but on the power of God. What he was telling them was the same as your wife. That God expects himself to be more important to you than you are to yourself. It's the same thing. In the third chapter of Corinthians, 1 Corinthians, he said this, let no man deceive himself. If any man among you thinks that he's wise and sage, he must become foolish so that he may become wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness before God. For it is written, he is the one who catches the wise in their craftiness, and again, the Lord knows the reasonings of the wise, that they're useless. So then, let no one boast in men, for all things belong to you. I'm only going to read three quotes of Jesus this morning. And the first one is this. It comes from Luke chapter 7, verse 35. Jesus, they were talking about what people were comparing Jesus and John. And he said, "Wisdom is vindicated by her children." The same event or a similar event is recorded back in Matthew chapter 11, verse 19. And there he says, "Wisdom is vindicated by her deeds." And what he's saying is that second definition of wisdom, that wisdom is judged by its outcome. It's the result of what happens. That's what he was trying to say. In English culture, we would say the proof is in the pudding. Did any of you say that? Don't tell me how good a cook you are. Let me taste your pudding. That's the thing that's going to tell us what it is. Romans 1, verse 18 and following, it tells us this. Actually, I'm going to skip down to verse 22. This is where the sophomore comes in. Verse 22, he says of those that be wise in this world, professing to be wise, they became fools. They exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image of the form of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures. God gave them over to the lust of their hearts to impurity so that their bodies would be dishonored among them. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason, God gave them over to degrading passions. For their women exchanged the natural function for that which is unnatural. In the same way also, the men abandoned the natural function of the woman and burned in their desire toward one another. Men with men, committing indecent acts and receiving in their own persons the due penalty of their error. Last Sunday night, you know, Glenn spoke of an article that was in the Courier last week. And it is a terrible and concerning thing. And it's talking about the efforts of the government to force churches to accept homosexuality and like homosexual ministers and things like that. And that is distressing to see. You know, our government is pandering to the homosexual community the way they used to pander to churches. And probably for some of the same reasons. It's a sad thing. But you know what? That's nothing for us to fear. You know, there are going to be churches that cave to the pressure. They're going to look at the value of their property. They're going to keep their property. They're going to want to keep the things of this world. And somebody's going to come in and threaten to sue them if they don't hire a homosexual minister. It could happen to us. What are we going to do about it if it does? Are we going to worry about losing our building? You know, this building has got six exits. In case you forgot. There's two up here, there's two back there, and there's two in the old part. Are we going to be found trying to hang on to the things of this world? Or are we going to be doing what God told us to do? The most that they can take away from us is all of the stuff. It's just stuff. It's just material stuff. We shouldn't be worried about it. And actually, if the government did that, they'd be doing us a favor. And I mean that on a couple levels. You know, I've been thinking this more and more the older I get, that I think if the government would just get honest and admit that they don't like us and come after us, we'd probably be better off. We would. Because some of the pandering they've done in the past, I think, has done us a lot of harm. But think about this way. If those other churches that cave, there are people in those churches that actually are seeking God. They're going to be seeking a new place to worship. And if we're found doing the right thing, wisely following God, and they come and see us, then we'll find them a place. And then us and they will be better off. This can be a blessing for us. You know, Jesus gave up everything that he had or could have had in this world. He surrendered it. He did things and he allowed things to happen to him that by human wisdom make no sense at all. The king just simply does not offer himself up as a sacrifice. He picks somebody else and he sacrifices them. If you measure the acts of Jesus by human wisdom, he wasn't a wise man at all. He was a fool. And there are a lot of depictions of Jesus that make him out to be that way. But Jesus was thinking about that second definition of wisdom. The one where wisdom is vindicated by her children. He was thinking about what the outcome was. He gave up everything. He gave up heaven. He came and he lived the life that he did with us. He taught. He showed example. He suffered. And he died in the flesh. Foolish things, everyone. Foolish things, everyone, by the eyes of the world. It's just not the wise way that you do things. But he was thinking about what was going to happen. And because of what he did, we have redemption. We have salvation. We can be children of God because of what he did. His foolishness was wisdom. So the question is, what will it be for you? Will you live by your own wisdom? Will you live by the foolishness of God? Jesus also said, this is recorded in Matthew chapter 7, verse 24. He said, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and acts on them may be compared to the wise man who builds his house on the rock." We teach the song to our kids. Do we live the life? In chapter 16, this is beginning verse 24, he's talking to his disciples and he said, "If anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. What will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? What will a man give in exchange for his soul?" Wisdom won't save you. Solomon proved it. He did a good job. Wisdom is vindicated by our children. What will this wisdom be for you? The church, the elders, stand ready to help you if we can in any way today. Won't you come?